Good morning, and may it please the Court. My name is Kristen Clano, and I represent appellate Renato Parker. Your Honors, this case is about the 10-year sentence that Mr. Parker received based entirely on a sentencing stipulation that the district court later found was the product of ineffective assistance of counsel. At sentencing, the district court found Mr. Parker responsible for at least 50 kilograms expressly because, quote, this is what was agreed to. The district court later found Mr. Parker only, quote, agreed to this stipulation because of the erroneous advice of his counsel. The district court erred at sentencing by relying on that stipulation. The district court further erred by finding that Mr. Parker was not prejudiced by that stipulation based on case law that we think is wrong. Here, Mr. Parker does not challenge his guilty plea. Thus, the prejudice standard should be governed by that set forth by the Supreme Court in Strickland v. Washington. In that case, prejudice requires a showing that there be a reasonable probability that the outcome would have been different but for counsel's error. Here, but for counsel's failure to advise Mr. Parker about the consequences of the stipulation, there's a reasonable probability that Mr. Parker would have received less than the 10-year sentence he...
Counsel, the argument you're making seems to depend on the proposition that your client committed perjury and should be allowed to get away with it. Your client is asked in open court whether he concedes that he distributed 50 kilograms of cocaine, and he says yes. And the judge then says, and are you any reasons for this other than the fact that it's true? Your client says no. Right? That's under oath. So your client's current position is, I intentionally lied to the judge, and the judge should let me get away with perjury scot-free. Why should a court ever allow that?
Your Honor, I don't believe that's not our position, that he lied under oath. He does not...
Well, how are his statements to the district judge true if the statements he's now making about his reasons for pleading are true? What he's now saying is, I didn't say these things because they are true, although I told the judge they were. I said these things because I thought it was essential to get the prosecutor's support for the safety valve reduction. Now, he could have said that to the district judge when he was pleading guilty, but he denied having any such motive, right? So how are these two statements compatible? They seem to be, if one of them is true, the other one is a lie.
Admittedly, Your Honor, there is difficulty in reconciling the two. But I think what the court needs...
Impossibility is the word you're hoping for.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Impossibility, not difficulty.
Right. You see, your problem is we keep saying that when people who plead guilty make representations under oath to the judge, they're bound by it. No one twisted your client's arm to lie to the judge. On your client's own position, he could have said to the judge, look, the reason I'm making this concession is because I want a deal in which the prosecutor will support my request for the safety valve. And that's why I'm saying this. Nothing interfered with his saying that to the judge, but he didn't say that to the judge.
Your Honor, we have to consider this in the context of the defendant, who has gone through 2 days of trial. The trial recessed. This is a Friday afternoon.
Even 2 days into a trial, defendants under oath are required to tell the truth.
Absolutely. But when their construction of the law and the consequences of those actions are based solely on what counsel tells them.
Fine. And look, suppose counsel told him, as he says, that in order to get the prosecutor's support for the safety valve reduction, he had to make this concession. Then, and he believes that, right? Then, when the district court says, why are you making this concession? He says to the district court, it's because I need to do this in order to get the prosecutor's support for the safety valve. Right? There's nothing. His lawyer didn't say on his current story, and you have to lie to the court in order to make this work. Right? If the lawyer had said that, he would be disbarred pronto. But your client doesn't even say that his lawyer told him to lie. He just lied spontaneously on his current story and gratuitously. And now he wants us to let him off scot-free for his lie and accept his latest story.
Your Honor, The issue here is the ineffective assistance of counsel.
Right, and but you get my point. He is not saying that his lawyer told him he had to lie to the court. He's saying his lawyer told him he had to accept responsibility for 50 kilograms in order to achieve a particular objective. And the judge is trying to get the terms of any plea bargain or any such thing on the record. And in response to that question, your client denies that there was any understanding and denies that he is accepting 50 kilograms for any reason other than its truth.
Your Honor, the plea colloquy is, again, as I mentioned, it's a difficult issue for us.
No, it's really easy for a defendant. All he has to do is tell the truth.
I think you mean it's difficult for you to explain that problem.
Yes, difficult for me to explain that problem. But let's think about what we're looking at here. I mean, if the system works as it should, you have a layperson, a defendant who's being charged by the government. The government's method.
He knows the difference between a lie and telling the truth about his own behavior. When you ask him, "Did you do this?" and he says, "Yes." And if that is not true, he knows that's a lie.
And if
he doesn't have to be learned in the law for that program. That is what it does not require.
And if his lie, knowledge. Sorry, Your Honor. And if his lie is premised on counsel's erroneous advice, are we just supposed to?
Counsel didn't tell him to lie, right? He is not saying that part of the advice he got from this lawyer was to lie to the judge. Right, he's saying you want to accept responsibility for a strategic reason, right? But what he said to the judge is, "I'm acknowledging 50 kilograms because it's true," right? And that's my initial question to you: why isn't he held to that representation under oath in court?
He is held to that representation, but that doesn't get rid of this entire case. There's still an issue with what the court did at sentencing in that case.
The court held him to that representation. That's all that happened at sentencing.
There was contradictory evidence, and there was evidence in the record that undermined that stipulation. And the court made no credibility determination with regards to which evidence, with regards to whether the stipulation was supported by accurate and reliable information. The record before the district court undermined the accuracy of the stipulation. And as this court has held, sentencing determinations can't be made premised on inaccurate and unreliable information. So one of the issues...
It's kind of wonderful for a defendant to say, it's true, I conceded 50 kilograms under oath, but no reasonable judge can believe me, I'm such an obvious liar. And that this is not an argument that sits well in a defendant's mouth.
At the same time, the district court is obligated to make sure that its findings are and its determinations are supported by accurate and reliable information.
The judge had heard a couple of days' worth of testimony of some pretty substantial drug quantities exceeding 50 kilograms attributable to your client and ultimately accepted the stipulation. So isn't that a finding?
I don't think it is. The record before this court and the only thing that we have, the district court at sentencing expressly found on page 33 of the sentencing court transcript, I find Mr. Parker responsible for at least 50 kilograms because that was, quote, what was agreed to. He doesn't say based on what was agreed to and all this evidence that I saw at trial. Even though the government urged him to go there, he didn't go there. And we don't know what credibility determination he would have made. Because he didn't rely on the drug quantity during that stipulation. Turning back quickly to the prejudice standard that we believe the court erroneously applied. Here, Mr. Parker does not challenge his plea, but he challenges the stipulation. Therefore, he should not be required to show that he would have otherwise.
Do you think that's possible?
Yes.
Why? Assuming that he takes back his concession. It wasn't a stipulation, by the way. A stipulation is a joint agreement of the parties. This is just a concession by your client. Assuming he takes back his concession, why can't the prosecutor take back its concessions, including such things as dismissal of 10 counts, agreement to the reduction for acceptance of responsibility? Now, one would think the only thing that could happen in this case is a remand for trial, in which your client's sentence is probably going to go up.
Your Honor, I see my time has run. May I respond?
As long as we're asking questions, you can keep giving answers.
Thank you, Your Honor. Here, the district... Let me try to answer it as best I can. The plea is separate from the drug quantity determination. Here, Mr. Parker could have pled blind to all of the counts. All of them would have run concurrent. The determinative sentencing factor...
He pleaded to all of them. He can't get what he has now, which is a bunch of counts dismissed, an acceptance of responsibility sponsored by the U.S. attorney.
He could still get acceptance of responsibility. We know that it's obviously within the district court's discretion to grant acceptance of responsibility, and we argue that he would still merit acceptance of responsibility and safety valve. He gave...
He could argue that, but the probability... After you plead guilty 2 days into a trial and then persuade the Court of Appeals to take back the plea, the probability that the judge will give you that reduction is negligible.
We still submit that there is a reasonable probability that but for counsel's advice, Mr. Parker could have entered a blind plea to all counts. The sentencing determination then would have been before the district court. And all we want is the opportunity to go back before the district court to allow the district court to make that finding, or to at least make the finding of whether there's a reasonable probability that Mr. Parker could have obtained a lower sentence.
Let me ask you, have you discussed with your client the possibility that if he wins on this appeal, the thing he will win is a reinstatement of all the charges, and he then gets, if he wants, a chance to make a straight no-bargain plea to all 11 counts and be sentenced without an acceptance of responsibility reduction? Does your client know that that's a possible
Absolutely.
Outcome?
We've discussed that several times, and Mr. Parker is adamant that what the result in this case would have been different if he would have been properly advised as to the consequences of entering into the stipulation. And if there's nothing further, thank you.
Thank you very much, counsel. Mr. Grohman.
Do you have something you want to add to Judge Easterbrook's analysis?
Not much, Your Honor. I just wanted to raise the point that they're even putting aside all the reasons that Judge Easterbrook has set forth. There just is an overwhelming evidence, aside from the stipulation in this.
What is the stipulation?
Aside from the quantity stipulation,
there wasn't a stipulation. There was a concession.
Aside from the defendant's concession that he distributed over 50 kilograms of cocaine, and aside from his counsel's concession at sentencing that he distributed over 50 kilograms of cocaine, on the record there's two co-conspirators' testimonies, which is bolstered by 12 wiretaps, which is bolstered by three videotapes. So even putting aside the concession, there is a ton of evidence on the record that it is over 50 kilograms of cocaine, and therefore, even under defendant's own standard of prejudice, he cannot succeed.
So you think we should affirm in order to protect the defendant from getting the enhancement for frivolous denial of relevant conduct?
Yes. If this gets remanded back, the government will argue against the application of the safety valve and will argue against the application of the...
That's precisely what Judge Easterbrook said, and I want to know whether you have something to add to what he said.
No, at this point, Your Honor, no, I don't.
That's a good idea.
If the court has any other questions, I will answer them now. If not, thank you.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.